Krishna. Thank you all for coming to our program this evening. As Mukhi mentioned, we'll be speaking from Bhagavad Gita as it is, on His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Srila Prabhupada. This evening we're going to read from the third chapter of Bhagavad Gita, text number 13. So we can chant it together. Let me just do the word meanings while they're getting it up there. Yajna-shista, of food taken after performance of yajna, asina, eaters, santa, the devotees, muchyante, get relief, sarva, all kinds of, kilvishai, from sins, bunjate, enjoy, te, they, to, but, agam, grievous sins, papa, sinners, ye, who, pachanti, prepare food, atmakarnat, for sense enjoyment. Yajna shista sina shanto, mujjante sarvakil vishai, bunjate te twagam papa, ye pachantyatma karanat. Others want to chant? in Srila Prabhupada's translation and purport, the devotees of the Lord are released from all kinds of sins because they eat food which is offered first for sacrifice. Others who prepare food for personal sense enjoyment verily eat only sin. Purport. The devotees of the Supreme Lord, or the persons who are in Krishna consciousness, are called Shantas. They are always in love with the Lord, as described in the Brahma Samhita 5.38, Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Santak Sadaiva Hrideshu Vilokayanti. The Shantas, being always in a compact of love with the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, the giver of all pleasures, or Mukunda, the giver of liberation, or Krishna, the all-attractive person, cannot accept anything without first offering it to the Supreme Person. Therefore, such devotees always perform yajñas in different modes of devotional service, such as shravanam, kirtanam, vishnu, smaranam, archanam, etc. And these performances of yajna keep them always aloof from all kinds of contamination of sinful association in the material world. Others who prepare food for self or sense gratification are not only thieves, but also the eaters of all kinds of sins. How can a person be happy if he is both a thief and sinful? It is not possible. Therefore, in order for people to become happy in all respects, they must be taught to perform the easy process of Sankirtan Yajna in full Krishna consciousness. Otherwise, there is no peace or happiness in the world. Srila Prabhupada ki jai. Om Gyana Timurandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshuru Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurave Namaha. So the Bhagavad Gita always has some good word for us, some encouraging word, happiness. Peace and happiness are things that people struggle quite hard for throughout their lives, throughout history, throughout the world. But a simple formula for that peace and happiness is given by Srila Prabhupada in this verse. So we'll talk a little bit about that, how to attain that. Because this process of yajna is so important that our acharyas, or those teachers in our line, have spent much of their time and energy explaining to it to us in various ways. And due to the fact that those previous acharyas have done that, as I start this evening, I want to first acknowledge and seek the blessings of two such acharyas or teachers who, over the last few days, we celebrated their disappearance day from this world. I have pictures of them. You want to put up their Madhvacharya first? Madhvacharya. He made his appearance in this world in 1239, and he departed this world in 1319. We're actually linked with him in our sampradaya, or our disciplic succession of teachers, being Madhva Gaudiya Sampradayas, Brahma Madhva Gaudiya Sampradayas. And so his teachings are foundational to this Krishna consciousness movement, and we do want to seek his blessings here today. The other is Sri Ramanujacharya. We have a picture of him also. Does anybody have any idea how long Sri Ramanujacharya lived?
120 years,
correct. From 1017 to 1137, Sri Ramanujacharya is the prominent guru in the Sri Vaishnava Sampradaya, headquartered at Sri Rangam in South India. I want to tell a little story about Sri Ramanujacharya today because it helps us deal with the subject matter that we've just read in Srila Prabhupada's purport. Ramanujacharya, at one point in his life, he was in Kanchipuram, which is a holy place in South India, and he was going to go to Sri Rangam to associate with the disciples of Yamanucharya and the Sri Vaishnavas. And so at one particular point in time, he left Kanchipuram and went to Sri Rangam. And there, he immersed himself in the teachings of the Shastra, and he was advised to take a Vaishnava mantra from one devotee who was a disciple of Yamanucharya named Ghosti Purnam. Now, you may know, if you're familiar with our tradition, that when one approaches a spiritual personage to take mantra or receive some spiritual instruction, that's only really effective if you go in an attitude of humility and submission. Tadvidi pranipate na pariprasneva sevaya upadekshanti te gyanam gyaninas tadvidarshanam. Krishna actually himself advises this in Bhagavad Gita, that if you want to take spiritual instruction, then you do it by submission and questioning, inquiry, submissive inquiry. That's the process. And so part of that process of submissive inquiry means that one controls his mind and senses, brings those wild horses of the senses under control, and humbly approaches a guru and inquires. And so this is what Ramanujacharya did when he approached Ghosti Purnam. He did that 18 times before Ghosti Purnam agreed to give him the mantra. Just imagine how controlled he must have been. We're anxious, you know, we don't get it, and we're like, well, hey, why not? Why not me? Ramanujacharya was already a very accomplished in his spiritual path. It wasn't like he was just beginning. But still, 18 times he approached Ghosti Purnam, and only after the 18th time did Ghosti Purnam agree him to give him this confidential Vaishnava mantra. It's not such a cheap thing, Prabhupada would say like that. It's not such a cheap thing. It requires, as I say, sense control, sobriety. And so Ghosti Purnam agreed, and he gave him the mantra on one condition. That condition was that it had to be kept in absolute, complete, 100% confidence. Don't give this mantra to anyone. It's a confidential thing between me and you and the Lord. And the reason for the confidentiality was that this mantra is so powerful that anyone who chanted it could get liberation from this material world and return home to the spiritual world by Kunta and have a relationship with the Supreme Lord there. So there was a reason for the confidentiality. There's a reason for the qualification necessary. So Ghosti Purnam gave him the mantra. And as Ramanujacharya was leaving the place of Ghosti Purnam, it was known in the town and the community of Vaishnavas there that finally that Ramanujacharya was going to be given this mantra. And so as he left, a crowd gathered around him And they begged him, well, please, give us the secret of this mantra. Give us the secret mantra. Ramanujacharya was in a quandary. He was in a quandary because he could see in the sincere inquiries of these people that they were interested in spiritual life. They were interested in the goal of spiritual life, which was liberation from this material world, returning back to Vaikuntha Loka. He could see that in them. There was some sincerity he could detect. but at the same time, he had been given this mantra in a confidential manner and told not to tell it to anyone. So Ramanuja thought about that for some time. And then he decided that, okay, I'll give you the mantra. Now sometimes in our ISKCON temples in the past, they would do plays, and this is one subject matter of play, and they would have Ramanujacharya going up on top of a big building and, you know, like announcing there as loud as he could, Om Namo Narayana. Om Namo Narayanaya. That's the correct mantra. Since we're giving it out, we might as well give it out correctly. Om Namo Narayanaya. So he shouted out loud so that everyone could hear and they could take this mantra. And of course, news got back to Gostipurna very quickly. Do you know what Ramanuja is doing? He's giving that mantra to everybody. Gostipurna was shocked. Here's someone who had come and controlled their senses, who had subdued themselves and come to me in great submission to get this mantra 18 times, and then I finally gave that mantra. How is it that his senses are so uncontrolled that immediately upon leaving me, he gives it to everybody, disobeying my instructions? He was shocked. So he immediately called for Ramanuja, and Ramanuja came to him, and he said to him, I told you to keep this mantra a secret. Why have you so quickly revealed it to the masses? Do you know the penalty for such behavior? And Ramanuja told him, yes, Gurudev, I may go to hell for disobeying your order. Then why have you done such a thing? My beloved teacher, I realize that the power of this mantra given by you could deliver everyone who hears it. When I saw the earnest desire of the people to be saved from material life, I could not contain myself. He could not contain himself. Here was someone who practiced austerity and restraint of the senses for years, dedicating his whole life to that. But he's using these words, I could not restrain myself. Is that a good thing or a bad thing that Ramanuja did? Especially given this context that he's saying, I could not contain myself. You see, that's the thing, that's the lesson that we need to learn from this verse in Bhagavad Gita we're reading today. And indeed, in all of our activities in life, is that we have senses. Here, the power of speaking is being discussed with Ramanujacharya. We have senses and we speak. But how we speak and why we speak and when we speak makes a tremendous amount of difference. And that's actually the difference between control of the senses and no control of the senses. Not that we don't speak altogether, that we take a mona vrata, we don't speak. No, that's not our process. Our process is to utilize the facilities given to us by the Supreme Lord correctly, not incorrectly. And so, Gostipurna When he heard Ramanujacharya speaking like that, he fell at his feet. He said, "Forgive me, my child. How could I punish you? How could I curse you? Because you understood the real meaning of this mantra, and therefore you have acted correctly in giving it to everyone." So as he praised him for using his power of speaking properly. This power of speaking is one of many sensual powers that the living entity has. And all our acharyas teach us that we need to control the senses. Fortunately, a little later in our own disciplic succession, we have Srila Rupa Goswami, and we have a picture of him also here today. Srila Rupa Goswami, who in his work Upadesha Amrita, Shri Upadesha Amrita, or the Nectar of Instruction given to us by Srila Prabhupada, he talks about different vegam, or urges which have the potency to take us from the path of devotional service. Devotional service, as defined by Rupa Goswami, means engaging our senses favorably to please Krishna. But if we're going to use our senses, we have to be careful in how to do that. Therefore, he wrote Sri Upadeshamrita, in which he gives us some warning about these vagams, or pushings of the senses, urges that are there. And we need to be careful about these urges, else we will fall from the path of devotional service. And what's waiting for us if we fall from the path of devotional service? We'll have an illustration for that for you too, and you want to go to the one up there? Maybe you'll recognize this one. That's waiting for us. Does anybody know what that is? Yes, it's the Rolling Stones emblem. Rolling Stones means how to get the most enjoyment out of this world possible. And they've correctly picked the tongue, because the tongue can ruin us in two ways. Probably more than two, but we'll talk about two tonight. Modern society, or today in the media and the music world, they've taken the urges, these vagams that push the senses, as the meaning and goal of life. That's why they've chosen this tongue as their emblem. Because that, to a materialist, is the goal of life. Somehow or another, to encourage these vagams, these urges of the senses that drive us mad trying to get satisfaction. But as Mick Jagger said, "I can't get no satisfaction." That means his life is simply frustration. And that is what life becomes when we don't control the senses. So as I said, control the senses doesn't mean no senses, stop senses, zero. No, but it means how to utilize them correctly. Let's take this example of the urge to speak. Prabhupada, in the his translation of Upadeshamrita, Nectar of Instruction, he talks about the power of speaking. Ramanuja, he used the power of speaking correctly. So what does Prabhupada say about how to control the power of speaking? This is from his purport to the first verse of the Upadeshamrita. First one must control his speaking power. Every one of us has the power of speech. As soon as we get an opportunity, we begin to speak. If we do not speak about Krishna consciousness, we speak all sorts of nonsense. A toad in a field speaks by croaking, and similarly, everyone who has a tongue wants to speak, even if all he has to say is nonsense. The croaking of the toad, however, simply invites the snake, "Please come here and eat me." Nevertheless, although it is inviting death, the toad goes on croaking. The talking of materialistic men and impersonalist Mayavadi philosophers may be compared to the croaking of frogs. They are always speaking nonsense and thus inviting death to catch them. Controlling speech, however, does not mean self-imposed silence, the external process of mona. As Mayavadi philosophers think, silence may appear to be helpful for some time, but ultimately it proves a failure. The meaning of controlled speech conveyed by Srila Rupa Goswami advocates the positive process of Krishna Katha, engaging the speaking process and glorifying the Supreme Lord Sri Krishna. The tongue can thus glorify the name, form, qualities, and pastimes of the Lord. The preacher of Krishna Katha is always beyond the clutches of death. This is the significance of controlling the urge to speak. So we speak about Krishna. We speak about Krishna's service. We chant Krishna's holy name. We have plenty of opportunity to utilize the tongue. And if we do it this way, then there's no prohibition. Talk about Krishna as much as you want. When Chaitanya Mahaprabhu and his devotees were cleaning the Gundicha temple, they had a language or a code that they used for everything that they did. When they passed a pot of water from one to the other, they said, "Hare Krishna." When they received the pot, they said, "Hare Krishna." And all you could hear was, "Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna," going on between all the devotees. They utilized their power to speak in this way. And if we're urged to speak, and we choose to speak of Krishna, then these vagams or these pushings no longer become frightening to us. So that's advocated, and it bears out the truth of Ramanuja, that he spoke about Krishna, and therefore his guru could not fault him, and did not fault him. So the other thing that the tongue does is taste, and that's specifically pointed out in the verse here today. Krishna is telling Arjuna that if you don't taste Krishna prasad, or food first offered in sacrifice, what you're going to be tasting is sin. What you're going to be tasting is sin. Now, who here knows what sin tastes like? Does anybody know what sin tastes like? Prabhupada can tell you what sin tastes like. Should I read what he says? There are six kinds of tastes, rasas. And if you are agitated by any one of them, you become controlled by the urges of the tongue. Some persons are attracted to the eating of meat, fish, crabs, eggs, and other things produced from semina and blood, and are eaten in the form of dead bodies. Others are attracted by eating vegetables, creepers, spinach, or milk products, but all for the satisfaction of the tongue's demands. Such eating for sense gratification, including the use of extra quantities of spices like chilies and tamarind, is to be given up by Krishna-conscious persons. The use of pan, haritaki, betel nuts, various spices used in pan making, tobacco, LSD, marijuana, opium, liquor, coffee, and tea is indulged in to fulfill illicit demands. If we can practice accepting only the remnants of food offered to Krishna, it is possible to get free from Maya's victimization. Vegetables, grains, fruits, milk products, and water are proper foods to offer to the Lord, as Lord Krishna himself prescribes. However, if one accepts prasad only because of its palatable taste and thus eats too much, he also falls prey to trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu taught us to avoid very palatable dishes even while eating prasad. If we offer palatable dishes to the deity with the intention of eating such nice food, we are involved in trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. If we accept the invitation of a rich man with the idea of receiving palatable food, we are also trying to satisfy the demands of the tongue. It's a tightrope we walk. How to do things correctly, not be victimized by the urges, even in the name of spiritual practice. Last Sunday, Nagaraj Prabhu was giving a wonderful class here during the Sunday feast time, and he gave the example of a pencil. How much goes into creating that pencil? Simple thing like a pencil. But to come up with that, it involves such a huge industry and so many activities. Think about that and then transfer the image in your mind to a hamburger. What does it take to make a hamburger? Think of all the terrible, sinful, hard activities that go into making that little piece of meat. If you eat it, you're responsible for all the steps, all the sinful activities, everything that went into that final product. You're responsible. In the law, we have a couple of concepts. They're not too technical, so I'll mention them here because they convey the idea. Receipt of stolen goods. If the police break into your house and they see you're watching a TV, but that TV was stolen from someplace, it doesn't matter that you didn't steal the TV. You're in receipt of stolen goods. You're just as much a thief as the person that stole it. There's another concept, conspiracy. We hear this when we've been instructed by Prabhupada. He's told us, like in meat eating, there's so many people that are involved in a conspiracy. The person that kills, the person that transports, the person that sells. All these people are equally guilty by conspiracy. So everything that goes into anything you put in your mouth, you're responsible for it. Now, I doubt that anyone wants to let the uncontrolled urge of trying to satisfy the tongue dictate what they may be responsible for in terms of everything that goes into a meat product or a bag of potato chips. Forget the meat, bag of potato chips. You think that there's not sinful activity that you're going to be accountable for in a bag of potato chips? Anything in this world, according to this verse of Bhagavad Gita we're reading, text 3:13, if it's not offered first in sacrifice, you're eating verily sin. Sin, what does that mean? I think this word kilbishai is in the Sanskrit. It means sin, but there are some subtle meanings to it also. Disease is there. What were some of the other ones? Do you remember, Madhumati? What were some of the other ones? Disease was one for this kilbishai. Guilt. Very appropriate. Guilt was one of them. So we share in the responsibility for whatever we eat. And so we need to be careful about that in the production, because if the production is sinful, then we're involved in sinful activities, and we have to get reaction, whether it's disease or suffering or anxiety, whatever it is, we get that. But there's another aspect to utilizing the tongue to eat things not offered to Krishna, and that is that everything in this world is a product of the three modes of material nature: goodness, passion, and ignorance. And when we eat, whatever we eat contains those modes of nature. And so if we eat food in the mode of ignorance, then we subject ourselves to the psychological, emotional influences that these things have on us. It's not a free ride. They come along with all kinds of influences on your behavior. I think a way to understand this would be to think about alcohol. Alcohol, we know, if you drink too much alcohol, if you drink any alcohol, you become intoxicated. It impairs your judgment, psychologically affects you. It can create a dependence, which is some kind of an emotional need or something like that, just from ingesting alcohol. Well, actually, all things that we ingest, if they're not first purified of these modes of material nature by offering them in sacrifice to Krishna, then they bring these influences with them. And we can see them in our lives. Our minds become disturbed. We don't know why. Well, what did you eat? Think about it. I mean, these influences come. The modes of material nature accompany all these things. So if we ingest these things, then, and that's another way in which we are verily eating only sin, because it means what comes in is the result. And people kind of know this. I mean, at least the advertising industry noticed it. There was a carton of juice at my house. And I happened to look at it, and it's a Minute Maid thing. You probably can't see this, but I'm going to read it to you. It's a Minute Maid thing of juice here, and it says, "Put good in, get good out." You can taste and feel the words in every drop of Minute Maid. We fill every glass with this delicious, refreshing goodness you have come to expect from us. All because when it comes to life, we believe what you believe. The effort you put in is equal to the good you get out. So they know this. We're not talking about something that's esoteric. I mean, everyone knows. You are what you eat. You put in this, you get out that. Better put in prasad, otherwise you're verily eating only sin. You take sin in, and sin comes out in the form of all kinds of reactions in your relationships, in your physical body, etc. So the solution to all of this is simple, and it's given by Srila Prabhupada in the purport, that just offer whatever you eat to Krishna. Of course, it has to be what Krishna will accept also. It can't just be anything. But just offer and take that only. Is there any lack? Really, I mean, most of you have been devotees for decades. I mean, are you really missing anything by just taking Krishna prasad? I don't think so. And the devotees, they're pushing it on people. Everywhere you go, there's prasadam distribution. And so we want people to eat Krishna prasad and that way purify their existence and ultimately become, as Prabhupada concludes his purport here, peaceful and happy. That's the point. We want people to be peaceful and happy. You can't be that way as long as you are involved with the modes of material nature and the sinful production of food and life and whatever. So Bhagavad Gita gives us this practical instruction. And if you want to be happy, you can take it. If you don't, then you're verily eating only sin. And sin means you have to accept the reaction to it. So these are some thoughts on this verse of Bhagavad Gita. Does anyone have any questions or comments to make? Yes, Leonardo.
Thank you, Prabhu. The very nice class. Enjoyed very much. And how do we see things like milk that is obtained with cruelty? We know so much about this today that we didn't know before. And we buy this milk and we use this milk. And also often more in India and in Indian families than Western families. We see so much food that has a lot of chili, that you mentioned this in your class. And Krishna also mentions that it's not food in the mode of goodness, but sometimes passes as, you know, Vedic or transcendental in the mode of goodness.
Yeah, that's, thank you. You bring up a very difficult subject matter in terms of the cruelty that's there in the dairy industry in this country and around the world, probably, not just in this country. Taking that, which is a product of such violence. Prabhupada, he wanted us to establish cow protection and doing it in farm communities. I think we failed him in that regard in our first wave of attempts to do that. We got many farms, and there are many sincere devotees trying to do it, but it didn't work out. And we sort of retreated from that. But now I think we're seeing efforts again start to that. And I bring this up not because it means that everyone can, or every temple can or will, or every devotee family can or will, you know, not use products from the dairy industry because of the cruelty involved there, but because it shows that there's not just a complacency to let it be. We have to try to do something. We have to try to do something, and so just like there's an effort here, it's a small effort. Obviously, and maybe Mukhi can correct me, but I don't think that their efforts for the first many years are going to satisfy everyone in the whole community in that regard. But there's an effort, there's a community-wide effort here to say, look, we're just not going to sit in a lazy position, especially because Prabhupada has given the instruction, do this. We're going to try to do it. We're going to try to build it. We're going to work on it. So that's one way to approach the situation. And another, I heard just this morning, one of my godbrothers, His Holiness Bhanu Swami, was speaking, and he gave a response that Srila Prabhupada himself gave. He said, well, what can you do? Everything is contaminated. And today, everything is contaminated. So to shun the value of taking milk products, offering to Krishna, and then taking milk products without attempting to do something about it through establishing farm communities, establishing cow protection. I think we kind of have to do both. You know, we have to do both. Take a practical approach, but then work towards the goal. As far as chilies, etc., in eating, there are probably many people that take very hot chilies and everything that we haven't even experienced yet. So, I mean, maybe that's what that refers to, not what you might have experienced. It's probably a little bit toned down. Hare Krishna. Anything else? Yes?
Kind of an As kind of an observer of the community, I just wanted to say that killing an animal means it doesn't have to live in this horrible place, but continuing the support and financially of suffering is more detrimental than even killing the animal itself. Mm. So I just wanted to share that.
Thank you. It's as I said, it's a challenge for us. It's a challenge that we can find a solution. At least we have faith in Prabhupada's instruction that a solution can be found. But yeah, it's not enough just to sit on our laurels. We have to try to do something. And therefore, they're trying. Temple here is trying something, so we can try to support that and see it grow. Anything else? No, yes?
Many times when we cook, our consciousness is not pure and there are some selfish intentions. So my question is, does Krishna still accept our offering, like, even though it is not purely cooked?
Well, the degree of purity that you put in is the degree of purity Krishna will reciprocate with you. But Krishna also is encouraging to us. I mean, certainly in a temple, we live in a temple, there are certain requirements for those that cook and worship the deities. They should be brahminically initiated. Again, one should approach that service with a controlled mind, with a service attitude, not an enjoying attitude. That's the mentality that should be there in the temple for cooking. In our homes also, that should be the attitude which we have. If we fall short of that mark, then we need to try to improve ourselves, not just think it's okay. I think that complacency, we start thinking it's okay. That's the real problem. Not that you may not be complete 100% pure. That may not be expected. But if you're thinking it's okay and you don't have to strive for better, then that's problematic. Anything else? Yes?
What should we understand about food that has been prepared by non-devotees, like at a restaurant?
Mm-hmm. Well, the consciousness, and I think this is you know, a contribution that we can make to the world, and that is that it's not just the physical activity or the physical elements you're dealing with, but it's the consciousness. And so the consciousness of the cook, the consciousness, as I was explaining, the effect of the modes of material nature on the ingredients, all these things have an effect on us physically, psychologically, emotionally. And so if we eat food prepared with that type of consciousness, then we're buying more than the things that come on our plate. We're buying all that other reaction as well. And therefore, it's not advised for us to do that. Now, I sort of grew up in the Krishna consciousness movement on traveling Sankirtan. And so we weren't at temples. We didn't have facility to cook. And so we got what we could from different markets and things like that. And we tried with a controlled mind and attitude to offer that and take those things. But we did it in authority. In other words, we didn't just go in, what do I want to eat today, and see the host, oh, that looks nice. But we had certain things that, you know, were authorized, so to speak, you know. And so we tried to approach eating those things in ways in which were as pure as they could possibly be. And so that's what I think our effort should be, not that we take it lightly and just eat anything and everything because it's vegetarian. So, yes.
What I understand is Prabhupada made a special point on the karmic grains, because the grain carries some more reaction than fruits and vegetables. You know what Prabhupada exactly said about that?
Well, no, I don't know specifically what you may be referring to, but yes, the grains are particularly potent in carrying these reactions, grains. Right. And that distinction, it's a distinction from fruits and vegetables, grains. Yes.
Hi, how's it going?
Okay.
One thing I was curious about, I'm sure you're aware of the genetically modified fruits and vegetables and grains and all that.
Mm-hmm.
I noticed that I've seen a lot of people eating that still, and I'm just curious, you know, because it's supporting the Roundup, and, you know, I'm just curious what you think we should do about that.
Well, there's no need for genetically modifying foods and things like that under the guise that there's a food shortage, or this will be a better product for man, or something like that. And it's just, it's part of a myth. There's so much land, tillable land available throughout the world, but there are other restrictions on tilling that land and producing from that land. Governments, for instance, artificially saying that, well, this is our territory and we won't produce, you know, whatever. Or producing for rubber trees rather than, you know, fruit and vegetable, you know, trees like that, making economic decisions. And so there are more reasons like that for hunger in the world than the necessity of genetically modifying foods. And so I can only speak for myself here, but I wouldn't support genetically modified foods as opposed to natural ways, because who knows what the purpose is. And as I was speaking, the purpose is important. Who knows what the chemical reactions are as far as physically affecting the human body and things. All these things are unnatural. And so our program is simple living, high thinking, you know, simple lifestyle. Simple lifestyle doesn't depend on genetically modified seeds that we have to pay to Monsanto for, because they have a patent on basmati rice or something, which is, you know, completely ridiculous. You can't patent the Lord's creation. So that mentality of trying to control and be the controller is something that we want to try to convince the world. That's not the way to approach peace and happiness. The way to approach peace and happiness is to accept the Supreme Lord and accept his bounty by offering it to him. It's a simple thing. It's a simple act of love. Srila Prabhupada talked about love in the purport we read today. How does a child show his love to its parent when the parent is feeding that child? The child will take something and innocently, no, you have, you know, offer it to the parent. Out of love, there's some exchange. That's our relationship with the Supreme Lord. And so it's not a forced kind of sacrifice thing where, you know, it's out of love that we offer what we eat first to the Lord, and he reciprocates with us. Yeah.
I've heard it mentioned before, that before Srila Prabhupada's books, that a lot of these questions of foods that we put into our mouth being good for us or not good for us, or the consciousness behind it, wasn't even an issue for people. It wasn't even on their radar that they thought about things like this about their food. I mean, even the yoga that's been introduced now more in the West, and a lot of things, the consciousness of overall society has been shifting more towards this. Well, let me look at the label now. And a lot of this has taken place after a lot of these spiritual books, largely Srila Prabhupada's books, that have reached people and have affected their hearts or their minds. It seems like the individual efforts that we might have to try and shift, you know, this whole movement towards more conscious living, Krishna conscious, God conscious living, might be refuted or opposed by society's established current system for achieving, you know, life-sustaining foods. It's a lot easier to get these other types of foods because of the models that have been put in place. But to try and get foods that are, like you're mentioning, it's very hard to go against the grain that's already there. But it is making that shift. And even though one person or even one community might not be able to make that change, I think as more and more people, it's a group effort to go against this current model that's in place for achieving these foods.
Well, as I said, I don't support genetically modified foods, but I'm an individual, and I can willingly stand up and say that. I don't think we have to offer genetically modified foods to the deity. It's not necessary. I wish I could go to the next step and say, I'm growing myself, but I'm not. But I do support Gentleman Jaya, who's doing all the growing here. And the temple efforts to try to do that, all our movement's efforts to try to do that. So we do have some food offered to Krishna, Krishna Prasad, that's being served outside very shortly. So I'll let all of you go to enjoy that. Thank you, Hare Krishna.